Hello, my name is Edward Lempinen. I'm with the AAAS Office of Public Programs. I'm here today with Romain Morenzi, one of the architects of Rwanda's acclaimed Science for Development program. He joined the AAAS International Office earlier this summer as the new director in the Center for Science, Technology, and Sustainable Development. Professor Morenzi traveled a remarkable route on his way to AAAS. He was born in Rwanda. Early in his career, he was a math teacher in the East African nation of Burundi. He received his PhD in physics at the Catholic University of Louvain in Belgium. In 1992, he came to the United States to join the faculty at Clark Atlanta University in Georgia. He won tenure and in 1999 became the chair of the physics department. Back home, Rwanda was undergoing an historic tragedy. It was already one of the world's poorest nations. It's landlocked, and it has few natural resources. But then, in 1994, a shocking genocide left some 800,000 people dead and the nation's economy in ruins. 6 years later, Paul Kagame became Rwanda's president. Morenzi returned home the next year in 2001. President Kagame's government pledged to build the nation's strength and stability and reduce its need for foreign aid by developing its human resources. Science and technology, along with education, were designated the engines of development and hope. Morenzi served as Minister of Education, Science, Technology, and Scientific Research until March 2006. Then, as Minister in President Kagame's office, in charge of science, technology, and scientific research, until July 2009. In that time, Rwanda made advances that have been watched around the world, often with amazement. It has become one of the leaders in Africa's increasingly vibrant economy and a model for other developing nations in Africa and beyond. Professor Morenzi, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me to speak.
You were named to direct the Center for Science, Technology, and Sustainable Development at AAAS in late July. I wonder if you could share with us your vision for the center.
Thank you. As you know, in 2000, the world decided to move for global development through the MDG, the Millennium Development Goals. In particular, goal number 7, ensure environmental sustainability, and goal number 8, develop global partnership. And my vision will be to work around the two Millennium Development Goals, 7 and 8, and also in particular be an advocate of using science and technology, not only existing science, but also new science.
Clearly, your vision must have been shaped by your experience before coming to AAAS, and I'm curious about the lessons you've learned along the way. For example, what influence did your early experience as a math teacher have on your later work?
My experience as a math teacher was very interesting because you have here a student in the classroom and you want to achieve educational and learning outcome. In that classroom, you have students who are very strong in mathematics and students who are very weak in mathematics. So I learned very, very early how to empower the strong, but also how to work with the weak so that both can move forward. And that was very, very important. And later on, when I became minister, but also even just before when I became chairman of the physics department, I was always to work with people. So that's my early work as a math teacher helped me a lot.
Can you think of some specific experiences, whether in Africa or Europe or beyond, that have shaped your philosophy about development and also the role that developed nations play in assisting development?
Yes. Development is related to knowledge. When I think about development, I think about knowledge. If you look at the United States around 1820 and Argentina, they were at par. But the United States has developed to be a giant that we know because of two things: governance throughout the years, stable governance, democracy, at the same time, investment in long-term scientific progress, innovation. So that became very, very important. And as I traveled throughout Europe during my years as a PhD student, I was able to visit Italy, UK, Belgium, of course, France, and Germany and some other countries. You will see the focus on long-term education, long-term investment in science and technology. So I believe that that is the key. And science and technology can not only help to create wealth, at the same time, it can help to reduce poverty, to reduce human misery.
Can you think of any specific one experience or two experiences that were pivotal for you in understanding the importance of development?
As, of course, I was living in Rwanda over the last decade, and we're going to be coming to that. When I arrived in Rwanda as a minister of education, we realized actually most of the time we will have food scarcity, we will have food security, and we will have to rely on the World Food Program to feed the children in the boarding schools. And later on, as we were moving throughout the last decade, the Ministry of Agriculture and the government decided to work very, very strongly on using science and technology for agriculture, in particular the input. As you all know, if you take a coffee tree or you take a pyrethrum tree or a tea tree, it's all about botany. So how do you use that? How do you use botany? How do you use zoology to be able to work on the things? So that became very, very important. And then, later on, the implementation of the science and technology, in particular the use of agricultural input in also in other science and technology-based input. Rwanda now is considered to be one of the most secure country in the region. The latest report just came out. Actually, Rwanda is among the countries in East Africa is the most food secure. And this has come from actually a decade-long investment in science-based solutions for agriculture.
You talk about your return to Rwanda, and I want to ask you a little bit about that. When you arrived back in your home country to join President Kagame's administration, what was the mood of the nation? And I wonder if you could talk as well about the condition at that time of the nation's science and technology infrastructure.
When I arrived in Rwanda in 2001, it was around 10 months after President Kagame has become a president, but also it was around 7 years after the genocide. I can say that the arrival of President Kagame in 2000 as a president was greeted with a lot of hope, and you will see that actually happening in the eyes of people. You see that a lot of hope in terms of development, because he's somebody who implements things, because knowing science and technology or educational policy is important, but it's the implementation that is very important. But something happened around 1998. The government of Rwanda decided to have discussions about the long-term economic development of the country. These discussions are known as the Uruguiro discussions or dialogue. Uruguiro, that's where the president's office is located now. So they have a long-term discussions. That came several orientations for long-term development, in particular the Vision 2020. But also, during that period also, very interestingly, they shaped the Rwanda Information, National Information Communication Infrastructure Plan, called NICI Plan. So NICI is N-I-C-I. National Information Communication Infrastructure Plan. Although there was no policy around that, but they shaped 20 years of a plan revolving every 5 years. So when I arrived in 2001, you have that, but we didn't have a broad science and technology policy. That was only information communication technologies. So I can say that what they were around. In terms of higher education, you have just the major university that existed before the genocide, though, the National University of Rwanda. But also, Rwanda has already started some new institutions, such as the Kigali Institute of Science and Technology, which was very new, just started. But there was no such a thing as long-term science and technology, science and technology policy.
I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on how the country's science and technology policy took shape. Where did the realization come from in President Kagame and in the people he brought into his government that science would be so important?
Kagame considered science and technology to be very crucial for long-term economic development of the country. When I arrived in 2001, there was, of course, an educational policy that we revised during my time. And that educational policy also came up with a strategy to move in the next 20 years. Also, we revised most laws that existed before the genocide, in particular the educational law of 1984, in order to be able to be at the set where we were with the education for all goals, but also the Millennium Development Goals. But also, we didn't have a law on higher education, a policy on higher education. So from there, we passed a law on higher education. We passed a Council for Higher Education for accreditation, but also what you call a student aid, a student loan scheme, to make that we ensure sustainability in the higher education, because higher education tend to be very, very expensive compared to low level of education, primary education, and secondary education. So after we finished that, the law for education, primary and secondary and higher education, then we moved to the science and technology education, science and technology policy in 2004. What was very interesting, around 2004, President Kagame, actually in a major speech, he said that Rwanda would like to be able to be, to create knowledge, to be part of the mainstream, at the same time to be able to get access to existing knowledge, but also to use science for commercialization. In a major speech that he made that. And from there, around that, we did shape the Rwandan policy with consultation. First, UNESCO gave us some funding to work with the CSIRO from Australia. And then we have a plan. And then from there, we move forward and we work with our development partners and our other partners in education. And in 2005, on May 25th, 2005, President Kagame and other stakeholders, we had a meeting at the National University of Rwanda to launch actually the policy, the discussion on the policy. From there came about a draft of the policy that was submitted to cabinet later on that year, and then moved toward that policy. And that policy also outlined several things. In particular, the goals are any other policy in science and technology, knowledge acquisition. What kind of knowledge? Knowledge acquisition, what kind of knowledge, what kind of science in primary education, what kind of science in secondary education, what kind of science in higher education, but what kind of science also in the general population, the public understanding of science, science literacy. And then you move to the world, the creation of knowledge. knowledge, what kind of science is important for Rwanda? You look at the existing resources, our biodiversity, the diversity, our river, our lakes, and you look at the soil, you look at the geography. What kind of science do you want for your country to be able to move forward? And then you move toward science, knowledge, I may say knowledge transfer. So most people, in general, when they think about science, they think about the dissections that they had in primary or secondary education, all the little science that they had in school. But they don't link really science with health, science with agriculture, science with water, science with population growth. So all the things are very important. Rwanda and Africa, in particular sub-Saharan Africa, we have water. But Africans don't have access to water. This is just technology. What are the technologies that you need to be able to do that? Same thing, agriculture. We have trees, we have forest. But how do you harness that? How do you take a coffee tree to consider as a plant rather than just to be just a coffee tree, just you put it there and then you go there and you expect to get the beans? You need to be able to trim it. You need to give him some food, like a fertilizer. So that becomes very, very important. And then we move toward the importance of knowledge, the issue of innovation and intellectual property right. So if you think about the three things, you have a tetrahedra. With other base, you have knowledge acquisition, knowledge creation, knowledge transfer. And at the top, you have innovation. Innovation brings you in three dimension. Innovation brings you in three dimension. You can educate people. They can have access to existing knowledge. They can do research, but stay there. They can transfer the knowledge, existing knowledge, and they can do that. But you need to be able to promote innovation. Create new things. In existing things, you can shape new things without going to research. You can commercialize, can come up to new things. For example, the Wright brothers in 1903, when they got the patent, it took them 3 years to get somebody to help them to be able to develop the aircraft because people didn't understand. They took this, this flying box is not important. What is that? So you have to be able to have innovators. How do you link innovation, commercialization, intellectual property right? That becomes very important.
Was it difficult or in any way challenging to impart that idea of innovation in the government, in the private sector, in the country?
I think it is always difficult because those things, when they are new, because people understand what is education is. But why do we need science and technology policy? Why do we need to be, say we're going to be creating new knowledge? Why do we want to do that? But when President Kagame was present at the National University of Rwanda to do the opening speech with the UK ambassador representing the donors, representing the development partners, that picture gives you what we're going to lay ahead. Not only the president and the whole government was ready to support the policy, but also our development partners were also ready to be able to help us. So later on that year, later on in 2006, after that 6 months later, I went to invite Sir David King, who was the chief science for the UK. He came to Rwanda and he addressed both chambers of the parliament on the importance of science and technology. So we continued during that period for almost for 1 year, we continued actually to do advocacy on the importance of science in every major speech. Then later on, as you know, the President Kagame visited the Royal Society, and also he came to AAAS in 2008, and he went to MIT, and he visited other places where he said, here we are. We are interested in science and technology. We think science can help us to move forward. But also you will see other leaders on the African continent inviting him, for example, at the African Union summit in 2007 in January, he was invited to speak on the importance of science and technology for Africa's development. And this year in February, actually, he was also invited at the African Union summit to speak about the importance of information communication technologies, but also to talk to other leaders, other presidents, to understand the importance of it, not to put it at the backside, to say information communication is a revolution that is changing the way we do business. And then from there, that meeting, actually, the president of the World Bank, the president of the African Development Bank, the secretary general of the International Telecommunication Union were there, and also even President Zuma spoke about information communication. In particular, he spoke about the square kilometer array, the astronomical infrastructure they are going to be building for astronomy, and how to link with information communication. So I think this became very important. You see, having that policy was very important to move toward the thing that I just said a few minutes ago.
It makes the progress and the effort systematic.
Absolutely.
When you look at that systematic effort over the last decade in particular, what has it helped Rwanda to accomplish so far?
During that period, I was Minister of Education, Science, Technology, and Scientific Research. The world technology is very important because during that period, there was also a transition worldwide from telecommunication as you knew it, the telephony and the posts, telephony as you knew it, to the integration of information communication technologies. So during that period also, although I was not the person, the minister in charge of telecommunication, I worked a lot in the implementation of the National Information Communication Plan. Not only for the first period from 2001 to five, which was mostly setting up the governance and all the policies, but later on from 2006 to 2010 for the infrastructure part, for example, fiber optic and other infrastructure that are there. At the same time, also what you see is the government moving towards saying, okay, in terms of human resources, we need scientists, so we are going to supporting mostly scientists with our loans. So most of the students in the government-sponsored universities, 70% is science-based. But also at the same time, they also linked the high-level science with also vocational training. It became very, very important. If you read the news now, the Chinese government is going to build a 10 million vocational training in the countryside, in Musanze, near where you have the mountain gorillas. They want to build a 10 million vocational training center.
Wow.
That is very, very important. If you look also in the news again, I was reading this morning, the Japanese government is going to give around $40 million for water project. When you talk about water, you talk about irrigation, you talk about some other things. This is technology. So you see, these things are happening. People are coming and say, oh, you have a policy. You have a plan. Let us help you. Mm-hmm. Let us work with you and you'll be able to achieve your objectives.
In human terms, in Rwanda, we've talked about technology, we've talked about policy, we've talked about education, but what has been the human impact so far in the last 10 years or so?
The human impact is very clear. It's a country that is at peace with itself. Mm. You can see that. Over the last 16 years, education has been at the forefront. This means knowledge at the center. The word knowledge is at the center. Primary education went from around 940,000 to close to 2.4 million. Now, this means more than double the population. On a 10 million population, 2.4 is in elementary school. Let now say if you just consider if we didn't have that, if Rwanda didn't have the 2.4 million children in primary school, now in elementary school, let's say 1 million out of the street. Rwanda has around 15,000 subdivisions. If you divide a million by 15,000, you get around 600. You have 600 street children. Can you govern? You cannot govern.
Very difficult.
So, secondary school, same, went from 50,000, these are numbers, to 500,000.
Wow.
Close to 500. This means 10 times. In a country that is as small as the state of Maryland, do you see 450,000 teenagers in the street? Can you govern? You cannot. So this has a huge impact. So we are talking about around 3 million, if you put higher education, probably to 3 million and 200, something like that, if you count wrong, who are on a daily basis sitting somewhere and being given access to knowledge. And if you take that, you look at long term, we can talk about sustainable development. Because if all these people were not in school, they would be around destroying things, they would be around the industry, they would be around, you know, you can have some other the things happening. But by putting them in school, you change completely the equation. As I told you, when I was in the classroom in Burundi, I look at two things. They are the strong student in mathematics and the weak student in mathematics. Higher education brings you economic growth. Primary education brings you poverty reduction. If you don't go to primary school, elementary school, you will always be poor. But if you go to, if you finish elementary, indeed, you can have some skills. You can have $1 per day, $2, $3, but you'll never have, most likely, $1 per day if you don't have elementary school, if you cannot read and write, if you cannot add, you cannot do one plus two. If you don't know how to count until 1,000, this means the year will go by without knowing that the 360 days are gone by. People, somebody who cannot, numerous is very, somebody who cannot count until 30 or 100, or imagine 100. This person, a day will go by, a month will go by, a year will go by, and he will not know that it has gone. In some circumstances, you ask a grown man, how old are you? And he told me, I'm 66 years old. This is a very true story. I have asked people. So this means this person lives in the world, but he doesn't know where he is. And they suppose that now you have a million of these guys. Can you govern? Can you talk about democracy? Can you talk about liberty? No, cannot talk about those things. So that became very, very important. That you see that have shaped the way people see things. So if you visit Rwanda, you will see that.
Do you think there are lessons in Rwanda's experience that are applicable to other developing nations?
Yes. There are two things in all these things, and probably we may come back to that later, the issue of leadership. I can give you a bread, and the bread, if it enters into your stomach, it gives you energy, and then you can move. But you may decide not to eat the bread. So science technology is the engine for economic growth. You can't reduce poverty if you don't have wealth. So we can talk about the issue of the distribution of wealth and the issue of how to help the poor, how to work with them. You can also work on that. Science technology can also help that to leave the poor. That we can work about that. You can discuss, for example, the mobile telephone has helped a lot. That things can be discussed. But broadly, we will say that science and technology help long-term sustainable growth. I say long-term sustain growth. If you want to sustain your growth, you need to have a long-term technological investment. And I think that is at the core of that. Then I can go there and outline some examples. Mm-hmm. For example, I did say a few minutes ago, I did say the agriculture, for example. In the early years of this decade that we just finished, Rwanda has had food security. Rwanda has achieved food security. But the next step will be full transformation. These people have produced so much, are producing so much potatoes. They are producing so much maize. So what do you do with the maize? Mm. They're producing so much banana. So how do you transform that banana? How do you conserve the banana? The issue of conservation becomes very important. Transformation becomes very important. Commercialization becomes very important. Mm-hmm. And the government has been working very, very strongly into that. That has been, you can see that. This is why, for example, coffee, Rwandan coffee, is in Costco and also is in Starbucks. From working with the population, the farmers, working on a tree, coffee tree, trimming it, giving the food, fertilizer, which is science, washing the coffee, drying it properly, separating the beans, and an aggressive marketing where you can do that. So those things have happened. So these are some of the lessons I think people can learn from Rwanda, and they're achievable, but you need to be able, somebody who is an advocate. The president will come around here, will say, we have this wonderful product, which is our coffee. It's a good product. Can you try it? Mm-hmm. And you try it, and you come, you see it. And then, yeah, this is good. But if you stay home and you think that somebody is going to help you on that, no, it doesn't go that way. You need to be able to go out, to be able to show what you are doing, that you believe in that. And that is leadership, is governance. How do you link with the farmers? How do you make that the farmers really grow the coffee? How do you make that the business partner, the business, the entrepreneurs, they build the coffee washing stations? Not just the government building them, but you want the local entrepreneurs to come and build the coffee washing stations. You need to be those local entrepreneurs to come to the U.S., to go to U.K., to sell their product, to say, we have this wonderful product that are backed by good technology. They are backed by, they are green, they are whatever, you can say that. But you need to be able to do that. All that chain is very important.
Mm-hmm. We have just a couple of minutes left, Professor Morenzi, and I wonder if you could talk about the biggest challenge facing developing nations generally as they move more now to embrace science and technology as the foundation for future development.
First, globally, there should be a consensus on the importance of science and technology for development, and then later on for sustainable development. USAID on 13 and 14th of July organized a conference on that, on science, technology, and economic growth. And I think the USAID is organizing a science and technology innovation forum at the UN on the 22nd in partnership with the New York Academy of Science. So I'll be there. I think that's a major push. That is very important. But you need USAID. You need other development organizations, such as the DFID, the Department for International Development, the UN. They need to think that is very important. The World Bank. That is very, very important, because you cannot reduce poverty if you don't create wealth. So, and doing that also, you come back to the issue of sustainable development, because the issue of energy, for example, biomass in the developing world, in the tropic, it does not matter how much electric car you have here. If you destroy all the tropical forests, the world will have a huge, huge problem. Mm-hmm. And that may happen because the population is growing anyway. Population is growing, The world has, in 2000, has around 6 billion. Now they are around 7 billion. Rwanda has 8 million. Now it is 10 million. Africa has 800 million population. Now they are close to 1.1 billion. These people need food. They will be cutting the tree. So you'll be seeing those things happening. If the world does not put its energy in supporting science and technology for long-term economic growth, but at the same time also for sustainability. And I have not seen that happening in the development banks. Is the World Bank doing that? Is the regional banks, such as the African Development Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, the Asian Bank, the Arab Bank, do they think that science is very important? If they think it's very, very important, if you look at the population growth now, because the population will continue to grow, because people are having access to drugs, they're having access to other benefits. At the same time, people live much, much longer. So this means that we'll have a huge problem on the Earth, on our planet. But the population will continue to grow, unless there is a catastrophe. But the population by 2050, I understand, maybe to be close to 10 billion, I think it's going to be even more. If you look at in 1970, they were around 3.5 billion. Now we are already 7 billion. Mm-hmm. So if we move, so these people, what are they going to be eating? Mm-hmm. What are they going to be clothing, housing, energy? They are going to cut more and more trees, more and more use of the soil. So these things are going to be happening if really the goal number 7 there and number 8 is not taken care of.
Do you see the AAAS center that you're now heading as being a bridge between the World Development Banks and the World Development Agencies and the governments around the world of developing nations?
Yes, the AAAS, because of its position, but also because of the experience that AAAS has, can be the bridge or the catalyst, as I said the other day, between the development institutions, being the government institutions such as the DFID or USAID or SIDA in Sweden or SIDA in Canada, the banks, because AAAS has developed a wealth of knowledge, have a wealth of network of scientists who are independent, who can give advice. So through the center, we hope to be able to tap into that, to work with the existing network of scientists who are member of AAAS, but also to be able to work with these institutions and come up with an orientation, with an advocacy, a real advocacy. I've been reading what has happening over the last decade in terms of sustainable development. But what you need to be able to do is to outline few things that are very important. We need funding. We need implementation. At the same time, it does not matter if you have clean energy here, you have clean energy in the UK and in Russia, and you have the whole continent of Africa, the whole continent of Latin America, and some part of Asia, Indonesia and some other people, where you have huge concentration of people. If nothing is happening there, the biomass is going to get us. At least that's what I'm seeing, because people will need to be able, will use the tree anyway. That's the fuel that they have. That's the fuel of the poor. But any tree that is cut brings us toward serious problems in the future.
Dr. Morenzi, I want to thank you for joining us today. You are always fascinating to talk to, and I hope we'll have the chance to talk again someday.
Thank you very much.
I also want to thank Carla Schaefer, who's producing this podcast for the AAAS Office of Public Programs. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.